The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Dr. Lou Need, and I have today a phenomenal guest that I want to bring on to the show, Charlie Mann. Charlie is the president and lead coach of Great Legal Marketing, an organization that helps law firm owners build high-income, self-managed practices. With over a decade of working with, for, and within law firms, he has seen how the natural marketing operations and finances plays out within these firms. And so he shows law firm owners how to take a six-figure business into a seven figures and then turn a seven figures business into a sustainable financial asset that will actually give the owners financial freedom, personal freedom, so they can get back their biggest asset, their time. So no further ado, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Luneed, thanks so much for having me. And, you know, for those who heard like, oh, law firms, I promise that what I have to share applies to all kinds of businesses. I mean, business is a universal idea. And it's funny how business and life translate across from each other. And I know like when we talk about a morning routine, just little things about how you are as a human being completely change how your business is and vice versa. So I'm really excited to talk with you.
Yes. And I'm sure everything that you're going to share with us today, you can transfer it to other businesses and just see how marketing and branding, how important it is. So I'm really excited. So before we get into the nitty gritty, I would love to hear more about your story, your why in particular. I know right now you're out in the East Coast and getting your snowstorm. did you always live there? So give us a little snippets of your background.
Yeah. So my background, I moved around a lot as a kid. So my dad was an FBI agent and I was born in Colorado, lived in Maryland, Michigan, Texas, finally settling in Virginia. That's actually where I went to college as well. And I was actually a theater major in college. So I'm now in the business world, obviously, but I was a theater major in college. And the thing that I discovered about myself in college and coming out of college is that my biggest driver was really being a husband and father. Those were two things I just wanted more than anything else in life. I wanted that level of connection with people. And maybe it was by virtue of moving around so frequently that family was just so important because those were your always people as you went from place to place. But when I graduated, I was dating my then girlfriend, now wife, and she was going to be a nurse. She is a nurse now. And I knew she was going to have a great job because she was so determined. She's totally different from me. She studied hard. She prepared and everything. And I'm a little bit more kind of that entrepreneur mindset of, I like having a million things going on. I read a lot, but if you were to ask me to learn like the intricacies of medicine, I would probably go insane. That's my bet. But coming out of college, I wanted to be a good husband and father. And what I really wanted, and this speaks to the why, Luneed, is I wanted autonomy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the idea of having like a middle management job. It terrified me. That wasn't how I was built. So I ended up applying to all these different places. And I found this company, Great Legal Marketing, run by Ben Glass. And he's still the founder of the company and one of my greatest mentors and friends of all time. And he showed me this world of entrepreneurship, of owning a small business, of, you know, even things like freelancing, of owning your life, where the amount of responsibility I take will create the reward that I get. And that just excited me. That turned me on in just a huge, huge way. And so that's now become my mission, is providing others the opportunity to have autonomy and self-determination in life.
Yeah. And that freedom is so big because it does. Your contribution, well, your service, contribution, your service will actually correlate to how much money you make.
And yeah.
You mentioned it. It's really that simple. Like, you get freedom, but if you're not going to work it, if you're not going to put in the labor and the work, you're not going to see the fruits of that labor too. So I love that correlation. We tend to forget it. We think entrepreneurs, it's instant time freedom and money freedom and the yachts and the and the planes. And you know, that's all a facade. I mean, the amount of work that goes into it is, you know, we're looking 16 plus hour days. What you brought up that was so phenomenal is the purpose, right? When you adding value, you're giving people that freedom, you're helping other people transform their lives. And it's key because that will wake you up in the morning.
Yeah.
That will make it all worth it.
And you know, I came from this theater world where what people would say if you asked a theater major, like, what do you aspire to be? So many of them speak highly of being a starving artist. And I didn't want to be that. And by the way, if your dream is to be a starving artist, it's a really easy thing to be.
Yeah.
All you have to do is call yourself an artist and not have a job. And I didn't want any of that stuff. So knowing that I wanted more and really wanted to imbue my life with that sense of there's something past aspiring for that lowest level. There really is something to that innate belief of there's more to life than waiting for someone to come and rescue me. There's more to life than waiting for someone to hand something to me. Mm-hmm. Every day I get to wake up and I get to think about the opportunities that I'm going to create for myself, as opposed to what do I think someone's going to hand to me today?
Right.
And that's a lot more fun way to go through life. That's just my thought process.
Yeah. Yeah. That ownership, it's really nice. And also you get to decide. And then you make a lot of decision on what you get to learn. You know, it's not just the general ed. You learn the basics for work. You actually get the opportunity to say, okay, I need to learn about SEO. I need to learn about marketing. And then I find that I dive in better into that when it's my own. You know, when I can actually see the results and see the number of leads that come in and then see the conversion and see the sales that comes from that. And like owning your business actually emphasizes the learning and shorten the learning curve as well. I find that to happen.
You know, with the attorneys that I coach and work with, this is actually one of those eye-opening moments. So a lot of them, they go through law school, you know, they've kind of got this career set to be an attorney. And as a theater major, I had the starving artist thing for the attorneys. They have what I often refer to as the Atticus Finch complex. The, you know, just you're just going to do good work and things will kind of shake out ideally in your favor. What they tend to discover, especially if you hang your own shingle, to use the parlance of law firms, when you open your business, that's not how it really works. It is, some people will, by the way, succeed that way. Some people will just do phenomenal work and it will start to stack up. And I'm a huge proponent of you have to be committed to your craft, whatever it is. And you have to deliver the A+ product or service. However, these attorneys come out and when they start thinking about like business, like the idea of lead generation, the idea of sales, you know, we use the term conversion because a lot of attorneys don't like the idea of selling and that's okay. Actually through the work that we do in marketing, ideally when someone comes in, you don't have to sell them. They just are, you're sort of helping them make a decision at that point.
Yeah.
But they start looking at like leads coming in. And the main thing that keeps them from doing that is a little bit of fear of the numbers. What if it's not as good as I believe it to be, right? I'll hear this all the time. Oh, you know, Charlie, I'm receiving about 100 new qualified leads per month. And I ask, okay, well, where did we get that data from? And they don't always have an answer. And say, okay, well, let's actually find out from your intake people or from yourself, if you're a solopreneur operating your law firm all on your own, and let's actually quantify that. And then you start creating a gamesmanship out of it. And that's what gets exciting to them. Just like you were talking about, Luneed, yeah. Is they start seeing the numbers and they're like, oh, it's okay. I'm actually only doing 40 leads per month. But if all I did was add 5 leads per month throughout this year, I get to 100. I get to 100 leads per month. And that gets them excited.
Yeah. And you tackle a good thing there because sometimes we associate our worth to the numbers, to the outcome. Jeff Bezos says, do not attach yourself to the results. Do not attach yourself to the outcome, to the numbers, because you have to kind of just focus on the value that you're putting out and being customer oriented. And I think a lot of the marketing piece is actually embracing that notion, customer first, and what is the needle mover and how do I continue to harness that and grow it? So tell us about Great Legal Marketing and how does it work in that space?
Yeah, so we're a coaching and leadership organization for law firm owners. We have two programs because we found that there are two core firms that we love working with. So the first is the Hero Program, and that's all about six-figure firms and getting them up to seven figures. And moving from six figures to seven figures is its own quirky little process. There are core like systems and kind of processes that you can use to make that move, but it's different from, okay, I've crossed the $1 million barrier and now I want to multiply it. So when you get there, we have our Icon Program, and that's for seven-figure firms. And I like to say this is about high profit, low maintenance, right? Isn't that which sounds phenomenal?
Yeah, right.
I mean, let's be honest. When I say low maintenance, it means you're getting out of the maintenance that you don't really want to do. And you're at a different level of what I would consider more interesting maintenance, which is big problems, big thinking. But we're also able to, you know, because we've handed off really the little maintenance things to other people. So that's Great Legal Marketing is really focused on those two journeys and how you move each one of those. And again, totally, totally different journeys from each other, which is why we separated them out.
Yeah. Tell us about the bigger problems, right? The big maintenance. What is the shift there? Because I can imagine the little is the operational piece of it, the day-to-day task. And so making that shift, we're growing to that seven figures, your thinking is different and you're operating at a different level. So what are some of the bigger problems, which is a good thing to also have, that that come up?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll start the journey at, like, let's pretend, Lunid, you and I, we have a $500,000 law firm, $500,000 a year in revenue. That's pretty cool, right? There are a lot of law firm owners and they'll usually have two or three employees in the practice. Like, hey, this is good. They're pulling high profit out of it. There's high owner benefit in law firms. This is one of the reasons why it can be very rewarding to be an attorney, financially rewarding.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do to get you up to that $1 million is the first $1 million is predominantly a marketing and sales thing. It is, you have to have incoming leads and you have to get good at turning those leads into actual clients. You know, you look at the book, Ready, Fire, Aim, and it talks about how the owner really needs to do the sales for the first $1 million in revenue. I was actually just reading another book the other day by Paul Higgins, Build, Live, Give. And he talks about the exact same thing. The first million, it's really the owner is often going to drive that sales process. So we really focus on marketing sales, get more leads, get more clients. And when you're under $1 million, like if we're hiring people under $1 million, Lunid, you tend to hire multi-hat wearers, right? Like you're hiring someone who can do reception, but also can be a paralegal, but also is going to put outbound mail and filter inbound mail. Like they're doing a lot of things. Now, when you become a $1 million practice, and it's interesting because this mirrors a lot, and I think your listeners are going to hear this and feel this in their own journeys with their own businesses. When you hit that $1 million level, something changes. You have to know that this change needs to occur in order to do it, which is we move away from, for example, hiring these multi-hat wearers to hiring specialists. Mm-hmm. So that person who used to, you know, do product fulfillment and would answer the phones and would do bookkeeping and would do IT, maybe now is just down to only product fulfillment.
Right.
And you're going to hire someone who's going to focus on your office management, like HR, IT systems. Mm-hmm. And that's a weird transition point for a lot of people because you love having folks who are kind of cross-trained and can switch in and out of different spaces. But when you get to that $1 million level, to go past it, to get to that $2 million, $5 million level, you hire specialists. And the other big transformation point is it stops being just about marketing and sales. And it starts becoming about operations and systems, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is documented because going up, it's now the matter of scale. And I love that term scale. Like it means different things to different people, right, Lanid?
Yeah. You got to plug people in. It's plug and play. So you got to have the habits. I equate systems to habits, right? Because that's what habits do. You automate things. You automate systems just how we automate our behaviors. So you automate everything within the workplace so people are easier to train. Faster onboarding, right? Because that's time consuming and can be expensive. Faster onboarding so that you can keep the wheel turning, for lack of better words.
Yeah. And even things like finances, how does money move through the business? This is especially taxing for a lot of attorneys, because if you're working like as a personal injury attorney, I know some law firms that, you know, they'll get a huge hit where they may bring in $500,000, $1 million+ on a single case. And let's say it happens in April, and they get excited and they just start spending that money without remembering, oh, my next big hit like that may not happen for 18, 24 months. Mm-hmm. I'll have a bunch of smaller cases in between then, but I need to plan finance-wise out that way. If you're a small firm, it's a little bit easier to not have to worry about those fluctuations sometimes. You know, cash is here, cash is there. You're really just focused on getting those clients in, because it all comes out in the wash, to use a phrase.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're over $1 million and you've got a lot more overhead, you've got a lot more people, you need to start thinking critically about how quickly am I turning a new lead into a client? How quickly does that client become cash? And oh, by the way, when we actually get the check, how quickly does that check actually become cash? I've encountered firms in need, and this is fascinating, because I believe this is kind of a good point of advice for everyone. Let money move. Don't get in the way of money.
It's energy. It's energy. Yeah. It has to flow. It has to come in and leave just as it has to keep moving. I agree.
And amazingly, you'll have a personal injury firm that maybe settles a big case and they're going to get, let's say $50,000 for their own fees. Now that's a good number, but maybe it's not a number that you have to have right now because they've already got cash in the bank.
Yeah.
So what they do is they sit on that for a month and they're kind of figuring out disbursements and all that stuff. And maybe we're waiting for the client to sign off. And every time I'm coaching a attorney, I'm like, no, nope, nope. As soon as there's money, you resolve it. You resolve it. You don't want things just floating out in the universe, because if it's floating out there, something can change. Someone can make a decision on your behalf. Control what you can control, which is putting that check in the bank and dispersing funds to your clients. Like, move that along.
Yeah. An analogy come to mind as you're saying that, because you brought up the universe about how something can happen and actually create a purpose for that money, right? Mm. And put it, you can put it elsewhere. One story that I remember hearing is people who are penny pinchers. They want to save a buck. And so let's say somebody's trying to move a bedding or a couch. They don't want to hire you all. They want to do it by themselves, put it on top of their vehicle and drive it down the highway. And because they want to save some money, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens as they're going 50 miles per hour, freaking cord snaps, couch goes flying. How much money did they save now?
You know, Lunid, you're talking about my father-in-law right now.
And my granddad, and my grandfather. It actually happened to him.
We all have those people in our lives, you know, and it's good to have like some of those folks around us. But if you're the entrepreneur, you can't be that person, because that's what gets them stuck, right? You know, you're a law firm, you're growing, you've hit $600,000, $700,000 in revenue. And then you keep thinking to yourself, this happens all the time, Lunid. It happens to other business owners as well. You start thinking about like, oh, well, you know, how can I just keep taking a little bit more money out? I want to add, you know, a little bit to myself, that's your little bit. And I've seen firm owners get stuck at $700,000, $800,000 a year because they start thinking about how do I pull out an extra $500 a month, which really is not that much, versus thinking about how do I reinvest that into my business, the reinvestment cycle in a practice. And you end up building yourself this elaborate trap, because look, here's the truth, Lunid. In a law firm, you could do $800,000 a year in revenue, and potentially as the owner, especially if you have a spouse working in the business, you could take 450 to 500 of that out of the business. But what ends up happening is your time becomes fully linked to that money. And so you have to put in the hours. You have to do tasks that are below your actual value as an entrepreneur. And frankly, as just a human being in your position of your expertise, if you're an attorney, you know, you shouldn't be figuring out how to fill toner in the copier. That's insane. But they build themselves this trap and they can't figure out what to do. And they've spent money on a house, on cars, on all kinds of lifestyle goods. No, 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 no. Build a $2 million law firm that requires very little of your constant effort and then enjoy a $600,000 to $700,000 payday without you needing to be there every single day. That to me is so much more interesting. So that's the transformation that we produce in the attorneys, the firms that we work with.
And hiring the right talent. And it goes back to hiring specific talent, right? Because now you put people in place that are smarter than you, that are running the show where you are not, it's sustaining and running outside of you. So a key component is, and I know a lot of law firms struggle with this, is how to attract the ideal client, right? And so tell us a little bit about the nuggets, the tips that people can use, and I'm sure it's transferable in other businesses, to attract your ideal client.
Yeah. And a lot of what we do marketing wise dates back to Claude Hopkins, who wrote Scientific Advertising. And now through guys like Dan Kennedy and Jay Abraham, a lot of these big foundational marketers. And we took those principles and applied them to law firms. But one of the first things I do when I talk about this is I say, you know, for most people, when I ask the question, what is marketing? They'll say it's building a brand, it's awareness, it's getting your name out there. But if I ask the question, what is the purpose of marketing? They usually will say to get a customer, client, patient, or donor if we're in the nonprofit world.
Yeah.
And what we ask is, why are those two different answers? So our approach is that marketing's design is to get you clients. It's not to get your name out there. It is specifically to get you clients because we believe, we've seen expressed, that a brand is a measurement of what clients say about you, of what customers say about you, more than anything else. Your brand is developed by their response to your product or service.
Yeah.
And so we use what's called education-based direct response marketing, which is like blah, 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 right? It's just a bunch of terms together.
Say that again?
What now? So that's why I always like to break it down. So it begins with, I'm going to actually begin with the second part, direct response. The whole idea of a marketing, a lot of people will be familiar with the concept overall, is you're putting out lead generation information that's designed to get a response. This could be SEO, actually, in many ways, an example of direct response. You know, you kind of see how Google is going to react to the marketing that you do. You can see the traffic. But then if someone comes to our website from SEO, rather than just say like, hey, you should call us, you know, schedule a free consultation, we'll have them produce books, reports, webinars, video series, education-based content that people opt into. So they might opt in to get a free book. They might opt in to attend a free webinar or a free seminar. You know, right now, as we're talking, obviously, we're still in the pandemic. So not as many people are doing seminars, though some are. Mm-hmm. And those are all opportunities. So we change it from just, you know, the three-word tagline, like honest, trustworthy, and aggressive, which I always love it because honest and trustworthy are the two same things, but I see them in taglines together, which drives me crazy, Luneed. And instead focus on, and this may be the most important thing, is what does the client need? What's the story in their head? What's the question that they're asking that they either need you to take away their emotional burden or their burden of implementation? So bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is stressful. There's an emotional burden to it because they see themselves as a failure. They see themselves as having been defeated. Maybe they're angry at the system, right? And really they're having trouble looking internally at how they may have messed things up and let things get out of control. Can we absolve them of that emotional burden by saying, don't worry, Abraham Lincoln filed for bankruptcy, which is true. Many famous authors, musicians, et cetera, have filed for bankruptcy. You're in perfectly good company. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Or the burden of implementation. Hey, it's really difficult to negotiate with an insurance company. Like, they do this for a living. Our law firm will handle that for you. We'll take care of all the negotiation. That's our job here. We're professional negotiators on your behalf, and we're going to take away that process so you don't have to worry about it. So what emotional burden or implementation burden can you solve for people? And if you just continually answer that question and produce content and useful information surrounding those ideas, you'll attract so many more clients. And clients who, by the way, come to you partially pre-sold because they already go, oh, this person's going to take away something that I don't want to be burdened by. So they're just ready to say yes. And it reduces price sensitivity as well.
That's a gold mine right there.
useful.
The story that's already happening in the client's head and being able to burden that struggle for them, that is huge. And I love that you emphasize that the content is educational, but they already opt in. They already want to do work for you. And you just have to help them make that decision, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
How do the attorneys help the clients make that decision?
I love that question because, you know, there's a lot of times people talk about the idea of, maybe you've heard it, maybe your listeners have heard it, follow-up marketing, you know, like drip campaigns, all that type of stuff. So in order to answer kind of the question that you just asked, Lanie, which I think is the more important one, which is how do we help them make the decision, recontextualize it as follow-through marketing. When someone reaches out to a law firm, they really have every intention of solving some problem in their life. Mm-hmm. The only issue is, they don't deal with attorneys frequently, if at all. Maybe the first time they've ever contacted an attorney, and they may try and kick the can. They really do mean to solve the problem, but a lot of times with legal issues, they can just keep kicking the can down the road, especially something like personal injury or setting up an estate plan. They'll just keep moving that because it's an emotional turmoil to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So let's keep reaching out to those people. Let's continually call them. Let's send them emails. Let's put something in the mail for them that will be of value, that helps them make that decision. You know, it's buying a house, right? And choosing your realtor, or let's say doing a renovation on your house is an even better example here. It's not something you absolutely have to do. Yeah, maybe there are some serious issues, like the water isn't running in your bathroom anymore. So you should solve that problem, but it's okay. You can go to the other bathroom for a little while. So they kick the can. And our whole deal is, in the midst of them trying to do that, stay in touch with them, help them out, provide them with guidance. So rather than feeling like you're calling them up and going, hey, Lunid, you gonna hire us?
Yeah.
You call them up and you say, you know, Lunid, we spoke a couple of weeks ago and I just want to make sure that, you know, we answered all your questions and, you know, how can we help you right now? Beyond just being your attorneys, or any, how can I help you right now?
Yeah.
And building a good, positive relationship with them, doing things that they don't even need to ask you to do, like sending them great information that will improve their lives. When you do that, a lot of things start to take care of themselves. Now you got to be tactical about it, right? It's not just as simple as, hey, let's create value. The world isn't quite that magical. But when you start from that point of view, and then you start baking in, you know, some of the like copywriting stuff that you hear about, some of the sales scripting that you talk about, then it all starts to come together. But it's the same thing. Like, you can't just have a sales script, right? Just like you can't just have value. It's when those things start to combine that you produce magic. And to go back to our word earlier, Lunid, you produce scale.
Yeah. And I think that's what is stopping a lot of people, is that it's one or the other, and they don't quite know how to couple them, how to group them to get that magic so they can scale and grow. And that's where you and your team comes in.
Yeah.
Right. To provide that support.
Yeah. We help them set up all these processes. You know, again, our specialty is working with those two types of firms, six figures to seven figures, and a seven figure owner who wants to multiply that and kind of start removing themselves from the constant day-to-day of the practice. And we do that by simple things, starting at phone scripts, right? How are the phones answered? Lunid, I don't know if you've ever had to call up a law firm before, but something like 60%+ of law firms, when they pick up the phone, answer with the two words, law office. Well, why is that? Why are we answering? Isn't it just as easy to pick up the phone and say, hi, this is Charlie at Charlie Law. How may I best help you today?
Yeah.
Sets things off on a totally different trajectory. So we make little adjustments like that, and then big adjustments. Like, how do you set up a leadership team in your firm at the icon level? How do you have people who take ownership of the legal operations, ownership of the financial problem solving, et cetera, so that way you as an owner can focus on the big moves of the firm, the big strategic decisions, that rather than how do I shuffle $1,000, it's how do I shuffle for $1 million?
Yeah. I got to ask big, start yes. asking big and asking the right questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, tell me about your principles, your habits. How do you get up, dress up, and show up? What's your morning routine like?
So first off, I'm a morning person. First and foremost, I love mornings. The earlier that I can wake up, the better. Now, I have two kids, 6 and 3. So my mornings are even more important. And the biggest trick for me is, can I get up 30 minutes earlier than my kids? So how do I find some time for myself? And I think that this is really important for especially parents in the morning, or even if you're just living with, you know, your partner or a spouse or whoever, it is carving out a portion of your morning that is uniquely yours. That may be most important bit of advice, to actually focus on yourself. So there are a couple little things that I do in the morning that make a huge difference. One of them is physical, which is big glass of water, big glass of really cold water, just to kind of awaken the system, to go ahead and satiate initial hunger in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very simple thing that you can do. You know, if you wake up feeling really hungry, yeah, start by drinking water. I usually fast for a portion of the day. I'm either fasting until noon or maybe 4 to even 6 p.m. during the day. And so starting off that physical change is important. Either get in a full-on workout or I'll do some yoga in the morning. Mm-hmm. And again, I do that myself. And those physical changes make a big difference. And then I'm also going to find time to read. I need to read something every morning, and not on my phone, a physical book, not on a Kindle device. I need a real book right in front of me. Something that I'll have a highlighter or a pen, and I want to take notes. And that's how I focus my morning, is by engaging my physical self, then my intellectual self, and usually with my family in some way, try and engage my spiritual self as well. You know, this might be family yoga, family meditation or prayer. We're just talking about stuff that we're grateful for in the morning and setting our day off on the right foot.
You really need a page turner, literally.
Yes, absolutely.
Turn the pages to read. Reading is so important. And a lot of entrepreneurs do consume content in the morning, because you're, especially early risers, you're at your prime. You know, it's easy to consume data and digest the data and understand it, because you're between that, you're in that alpha state where you're between theta and alpha. You're half asleep and still awake, but you're so mindful.
Yeah.
You're so focused.
I also, Luneed, one thing that I make sure that I do, since, you know, I've kind of indicated that I don't have I'm going to do steps 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 every single day. There's a certain amount of variability, but there is actually one core step that makes a big impact. It's actually the night before. So I don't make any of these decisions the morning of, because I don't want to make decisions in the morning. I want to go straight to it. So I make all of these choices the night before. If I'm going to do a full personal workout in the morning, I set out my workout clothes. I preset my intention for the morning. Yeah. The book that I'm going to read is already available with the pen and everything at my kitchen table. So that way I'm not thinking about a darn thing. I'm just go in the morning. Yeah, he had a guest on recently. I think it might've been Benjamin Preston, who he talked about how when he starts his day, he's kind of setting what the rest of the day will be like. So if it's a day where I'm going to be coaching a bunch of private clients through Great Legal Marketing, I'm going to read something that inspires my entrepreneurial side, because that sets that intention for the rest of the day. On the other hand, if I'm going to be in a day-long meeting, like I will be later this week, I'm going to do something physical so that way I can get all of the anxious energy out before I get into that room, and I can give all my intellectual focus there. So I love that idea of what's my intention for that day and build that from the morning.
Yeah, it does truly set the tone for the rest of the day, what you do between that with that 10 minutes. And it does start the night before. I like that you are bringing that up again. But was it always easy for you? Because you had to play around with it, right? You had to tailor it. You had to customize it to know what's best for your body. Because you know when you need the physical, you know when you need the intellectual stimulation. So how did you come to that final point of knowing?
I love that question. I guess it begins with obviously the self-pursuit of betterment, of deciding, hey, I'm going to be better. And that's kind of the big question and the commitment to that process. And then I tested a lot of different things. So interestingly, I mentioned back in college, I was a theater major. Back in college, I was also very capable of sleeping in until 11 a.m. My 30s now, that's not so much the case anymore. Over time, I tested, hey, how much working out can I do in the morning? How much reading should I do in the morning? What sets up my perfect day?
Yeah.
You know, like right now I mentioned I'm fasting. I started fasting about a year and a half ago, and then I kind of went off it to see, was it making an impact? Turns out it was. So that is now consistently incorporated.
Yeah.
There was some time where I decided I'm not going to read every single morning and feel and test how I feel through the rest of the day. Well, I found that it took me longer to get revved up when I got into the office if I hadn't already done intellectual revving up back home. Same thing with if I wanted to have a great evening with my kids after I get home. There needed to be a proper way to positively engage them in the morning. So I actually tested what was it like if I was just doing the routine in the morning, right? Like just making breakfast, the usual thing, kind of normal chaotic family thing. That didn't work well. It was destructive to my evenings. So now I make sure, okay, positive interaction with the kids, ask them about their day, help them set their intentions if I can. Lunid, I am so imperfect at so much of this, but I swear I always try and I set what I want to have happen, but I acknowledge I'm a parent with young kids and sometimes they're going to wake up and they're going to need me in a different way than I want to give to them. And I'm going to meet them there. They're my kiddos and they should know that they are supported. Same way that if I wake up and I had plans for the day and I get a message from a team member who says, my kid's sick, I got to stay home. I'm not going to let that ruin my day because I set my morning and I set how I was going to prepare for the meetings of the day and everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to just, universe is throwing something different at me. Guess what, universe? I don't sit down. I fight back. I'm going to rework my agenda where everything's going to be good because I'm going to control what I can control.
Yeah. You're agile, you're nimble, you're flexible. And the piece is having grace towards those around you, but also yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the trial and error is all about, is seeing what works and what doesn't. And don't kick yourself up in the hiney too hard, right? Don't be so hard on yourself.
So Lunid, let me ask you, I've told you a little bit about my morning routine. I've got you here. You've listened to so many morning routines. How can I make my morning routine better?
You're hydrating already first thing in the morning. You're consuming content, which is phenomenal. You're working out and exercising. Meditation is one thing I would add, is that intentional silence in the morning, whether it's 5 to 10 minutes, is something that would actually help with the energy throughout the day, giving you more focus and clarity so that revving up is a lot faster. Mm-hmm. A lot easier, regardless of whether you read or not. The benefits of meditation. That's one thing I would add. That's like non-negotiable for me. Mm. And cold shower.
I started doing that recently, Lunid. I started doing that. Yeah. I read the Wim Hof method and I love just, you know, testing myself. I end my shower with a cold shower. I can't do like...
Yes, the 30 seconds. Yeah, 30 to 60 seconds. That's what I tell my guest and I tell my clients as well. Make the 30 seconds, last 30 seconds ice cold. And it wakes you up, that alertness, and it increases metabolism. You know how you hydrate to kind of satiate that hunger? Mm-hmm. Well, metabolism, it helps curb your appetite if you're fasting, it makes it a lot easier. But also just the getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is what you get when you stand in under that cold shower. And so I urge everyone to give it a shot because once you start, you really go back because of the benefits.
Oh, so funny, Lunid. The other day, I actually forgot to do the cold water at the end and I stepped out of the shower and literally something felt weird. I was like, something's really strange. I was like, I don't know what's off about this. And I realized, oh no, I forgot the cold water. Now my wife was already getting into the shower. So I just went over, I splashed some cold water on my face. right? Roll with the punches.
Yeah.
But I've started incorporating that and I just need to make sure that I stick with it is the real thing because... Exactly what you said, Lunid. It's like you get the first major discomfort of the day out of the way. Because guess what? There are going to be more. You're an entrepreneur. Yeah. You're a business owner. You're a high-performance salesperson or negotiator. Day's going to get uncomfortable. But you've already agreed. You said, you know what? I survived cold water this morning. That's like, by the way, that's like survival brain firing off. It's like, I have to survive. I survived physical threat, obviously not real, but your brain interprets it as that.
Well, stress is a physical threat everywhere. Yeah. That fight or flight. We're constantly in a flight mode because of the chronic stress that we impose upon ourselves. And that is coming at us 100% throughout the day.
And so we're going to be fine, right? We survived that. Yeah. Rest of the day is going to be fine.
Yeah, it's that lighthearted. It really is, Charlie. Yeah. I'm really glad. Was that helpful? Do you feel supported?
Yes, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Please tell us, how can we connect with you? How can my guests find you?
Absolutely. So if you go to greatlegalmarketing.com, you're going to see a bunch of resources available there. Just kind of like I talked about, there are books, there are webinars. You know, our founder, Ben Glass, has written 3 books, Great Legal Marketing, Renegade Lawyer Marketing, and Play Left Fullback. I think a lot of people love to start with Renegade Lawyer Marketing, which you can find on Amazon. But if you opt into one of our resources, you'll see a lot of other free resources that we make available along with our coaching programs. And so start there, greatlegalmarketing.com. You'll find a whole host of ways to start improvement and then how we can help you massively accelerate that improvement past that.
That is fantastic. Morning Enthusiasts, this has been Charlie Mann, and it's been one heck of a conversation around just marketing your law firm, but how that transcends through regular business and how to, the difference between branding and marketing. That was very, very well said, Charlie. And again, your morning routine is robust. It's phenomenal. And, you know, even with the two kiddos, you manage to get your me time.
Yeah.
You got your you time because you're preparing yourself for the rest of the day. You got to take care of yourself because you can't give what you don't have. If you're not healthy, if you're not mentally well, you cannot go and pursue your business. You cannot go and lead that team. You cannot be present for your kids. If you can't put your own agenda together, how can you help them set their intention, as you said? And I actually love that. You're helping your kids set their intention. They're getting the best experience already. That's pretty phenomenal. So Charlie, it's been an honor having you on the show. I thank you for your time and presence this morning.
Thank you so much, Lunita. I really appreciate it. This was awesome talking with you. I love your energy.
Likewise, likewise.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.